The Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors: EliteForm.com, IgnitionAPG.com, PlayUSA at PlayUSA.com, and Sorinex Exercise Equipment at Sorinex.com. And now, the Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast. Welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk with your host, Ron McKeefer.
Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Everything you got!
On this podcast, hear Coach McKeefer's straight talk about training, featuring the top strength and conditioning professionals from around the world. And now, here's your host, Ron McKeefer.
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefer, and this is episode number 186. Excited to bring Adam Larkham to you today. Adam is the relays coach for Australia track and field, and just one of the best speed minds out there, and has done some phenomenal things. He's a physio, he's a strength coach, he's a business owner, a wealth of information. We get into each aspect of that, and just a really cool vibe, just a really cool guy that's doing some incredible things, and has found his niche in the marketplace, and really enjoyed this conversation. I know you're going to get a ton out of it. Before we do, I want to make sure that everybody knows about our Play Summits. We have released all the dates and the locations. We have some fantastic ones coming up. We're doing three international in Australia, in Sydney. So if you're in Sydney, or if you're in Australia listening to this, make sure you plan for that February 11th. We're doing Noblesville High School in conjunction with the Combine again. We're going to Baltimore, Maryland for the Under Armour headquarters. We're going to the Toronto Blue Jays up in Toronto. We're going to be doing one at Woodstock at the corporate headquarters. We're going to be doing one in Ireland. I just got back from Ireland, and doing one over in Belfast. And so we have some great summits coming your way, some fantastic speakers. And I want you to make sure that you guys know that until the end of the year, a Christmas kind of gift to you, if you go to playsummits.com, you scroll to the bottom of the page, you can hit the register now. And if you type in the code Holiday 2016. So if you just go down to the bottom, the code is Holiday 2016. Then it'll give you a pretty significant saving. $62.50 would be the cost to register by the end of the year. And trust me, when I start releasing some of the speakers that we have coming, you would pay $62.50 to listen to one of them, let alone the six plus that we have coming to the conference. So go on, register. You want to make sure you select the summit that you want to go to, and then put in that code at the bottom. But we're excited about where we're going. We're excited about these opportunities. Play does a fantastic job of continually giving back to the strength coaches, and it's just one of the ways that we do it. And I've been working hard on this. I know you're going to enjoy it. So go to the website, playsummits.com. Register early so you get the great discount. And then let us know on social media which ones you're going to be attending. Want to get to this episode with Adam? Sit back and enjoy, and we'll see you on the other side. All right, guys. Hey, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm sitting back in Australia with Adam Larkham. Adam's one of the top Australian strength and conditioning coach, physio, owns his own facility, and just one of the top minds in the country. And so I wanted to have him on the show. I wanted to talk shop. Followed him from afar. First chance to get to finally meet him face to face. We've been talking for about an hour here off camera and just learned so much already, but wanted to share them with you guys. Adam, thanks for being on the show, man.
No problem. Easy.
You know, for the guys that don't know you over in the States, you know, everybody knows you over here, but as familiar with you in the States.
Yeah.
Going to your background briefly, you know, talk about, you know, your AFL days and kind of what's taking you to the point of where you're, you know, you guys just had the best, that you've ever done in track and field at the Olympics, and you were a big part of that, and kind of your role right now.
So my background briefly is that probably 1995 I started as a strength and conditioning coach at an elite under 18 AFL football level. So that was my first job, and from then worked all the way through, worked in AFL as their head high performance coach, an AFL club, did that, and then consulted to the Wallabies rugby union team intermittently over this period of 4 to 6 years. Mm-hmm. And then my background was really strength and conditioning, and that's where I come from, and completed a Bachelor of Applied Science in Physical Education, which is human movement now,
sure,
in Australia. And so, yeah, that was basically my background from that point of view. I then transferred to athletics. I still do conditioning. I've never stopped it over 20 years. So I still work with elite team sport, AFL players.
Right.
Transferred to athletics probably 15 years ago. Started as a strength coach in athletics. Transferred to track. I now coach our national relay teams. Coach of the 2009, 11, 13, 15 IAAF World Championships.
Mm-hmm.
4x100 meters men and 4x4 women at the Rio Olympics. We made the Olympic final. So my background in that, from a point of view of professionally, that's how it's worked. Academically, studied, did an applied science degree, teaching degree, physiotherapy degree, and a master's in biomechanics by research.
Right. Well, and he was pretty short there, but he works with absolutely the best of the best in the country and has done it at a high level and started extremely early. I mean, it started at 22 years old, 20 years old. And we were talking off camera, and we kind of have similar backgrounds where I started as a 22-year-old head strength coach as well. And you make so many mistakes in those situations,
right.
You know, and you still, I mean, even when you're great like you are, you still continue to make mistakes. What's been maybe the biggest mistake you've made, and then kind of how you learn from it?
It's probably two. One is thinking that doing something wrong is bad. The wiser you get and the more you think it through, you're always going to mess up. But what you do is learn that they're not failures. They're actually growth periods.
Right.
So I really adopt a growth mindset. I don't get pulled down by what someone thinks or by someone's interpretation. I really keep my own belief. I'm optimistic, number one. But I always look at growing, and that means that when I grow, I'll always take risks, which means there will always be little perceived failures. The one that sticks out for me is I was working at an AFL team at Fremantle Football Club, mm-hmm. and I really worked with, the coach asked me to work with the elite players. I had one staff member to assist me with 42 players for a year. So I did all the running sessions myself, all the strength sessions myself. I took clean, snatch, deadlift, squat, all myself. I was at every strength session,
right,
for the whole year, and all the sessions on the ground in skills. And he asked me to prioritize the main sort of 10 best players. I did that, but I really alienated the younger players who needed a lot of development. And it was to my detriment because I didn't understand or have the emotional intelligence to really realize the impact of basically achieving what the coach wanted, but the neglect that occurred for the younger players, and it wasn't good, and I guess it didn't put me in good stead in my one-on-one interactions with the players.
Right.
And I think I was very performance driven, but I wasn't very understanding of the importance of the human being in that performance.
Right.
So I think my advice would be always understand the person and care about the person. And if you do that properly and you understand the performance, that's an awesome mix.
Well, that's what we're always talking about that on the show, and ultimately, that's how you get elite level performance.
Yeah,
there's a lot of elite level athletes, but how you get an elite level performance is that they're going beyond themselves, in a world record opportunity or an Olympic record opportunity.
Absolutely,
and you've been a part of a lot of those types of things. Track is something that was maybe you were a competitive athlete, but your most of your coaching had been done in rugby. You go to track. We were talking a little bit off camera about, you know, the difference between team sports and individual sports. And,
yeah.
And one of the things that you talked about that really hit me was just that you know, that ultimate, you're putting yourself on the line each and every day and within track, and you really love that mindset. Talk a little bit about that.
I think that in, as a strength coach, which is what I started in working, I absolutely loved the performance side of being a strength coach and prescribing whatever you did for someone and to see the end result, like it's almost like baking a cake and how does it turn out? So I really love that process. So for me, now that I'm 20 years later and I'm working as an athletics coach of our Australian teams, I'm now thinking right now for Bahamas World Relays and World Championships next year and Commonwealth Games, how I'll set our teams up. The processes of underpinning it are similar to when I started 20 years ago.
Right.
So for me, the strength coach and the idea that I had and the principles behind conditioning are really in being an athletics coach, except I'm kind of putting myself on the line more because I am the head coach.
Right.
The time of that relay team, which means that I put time and where we come are my KPIs rather than the velocity, the movement of the bar, or what weight they lifted, or their durability.
Sure.
They're the same things. Sure. But for me, it just means that I liked the stress and the sometimes the cortisol that's involved in it. But I like the periodization of a program that's multifactorial.
Right.
And me being the person that is working in that and controlling that.
Sure.
And I think for me, putting the puzzle together and getting it right is something that's really interesting and I think I'll never solve, but I'm always trying to answer it. And the chaos of it is cool.
Like, sure.
When you have a personality that can cope with that, I think you're made for that environment. Not all people are.
Right.
Because if you go into that stress environment and you can't deal with it, it's just not for you. I mean, I think sometimes as a strength and conditioning coach and you work with a team, you aren't put under that stress. And I think when you're with an individual and it's highlighted and it's concerted to one point, you are put under that stress.
Sure.
If that person doesn't run faster, why?
Right.
If it's thousands of a second improvement, that's awesome. But is it the strength program, the speed program, the durability aspect to it, the recovery, other recovery factors in it, psychological aspect. So yeah, I think it's, for me, it's just an extension of my role as a strength and conditioning sure. coach with more a technical element specific to the event.
You know, being a team guy, we even talked about you, that's just how you operate even within the strength and conditioning world.
Yeah.
You know, how do you bring some team building principles to working with individual athletes?
It can be really hard. I mean, I coach individually 100 meters and 200 meters in Australia, and I had some reasonable results. I had three guys win our national title in 100, two in the 200. One guy ran 10.17. Legally, his personality then became quite confident.
Sure.
Commonwealth Games is a big competition in our country and within our countries. He made the final of that 100 meters. In Delhi, in India, and we're in 10.17 of that year. So I saw him change as an individual.
Sure.
In a team sport, the personalities that are outliers tend to get modified by the group.
Great.
When you have individuals, they don't get modified. So therein lies the problem sometimes.
Sure.
And I think with team's such a good homogenous group of people that they deal with inherent differences but moderate them.
Right.
Whereas in an individual sport, they're not moderated, so they can just become super amplified.
Sure.
So what I love about team is that. So when I have a relay team and I'm bringing in individual athletes and they're not used to this, it can be really challenging.
Yeah, I bet.
Just to sit together with each other because they're used to just racing each other.
Sure.
But in a relay team, particularly 4x1 and 4x4, you need to be really homogenous and
right.
there needs to be a harmony. And that harmony, I've learned, is the key to developing as a coach. And it really came from my team sport training.
Yeah, sure.
So those skills you learn as a strength and conditioning coach, you bring straight into that. I think they link in nicely.
What's an example of something that you've done in that type of situation too? Like, 'cause that's a great point. I never really thought about that. You know, you got four guys that are competing in the four, you know, in the 100, but then they turn around and they make up the 4x1 team.
Yeah.
You know, that competition, that internal friction that kind of naturally occurs. What's a specific example of something you've done to kind of bring those four people together?
Well, one example that I was coaching two guys in the 100. They came 1 and 2 in our national final. So I was really happy with that year. However, I'm the relay coach of that team. We were racing in one of the world championships. And these guys are running for Australia. They're two of the four of the 4x1.
Right.
One of them decided he didn't want to come to the last meeting because he didn't like one of the guys.
Jeez.
He didn't want to be around him.
Right.
But this is in Germany, 4 days, 5 days before our race at the 2009 Berlin IAAF World Championships. And he decided not to turn up. So, and I coach him. So I'm in a position, a difficult position.
Sure.
He's individual and team coach.
Right.
So I had to make sure with the team that I set the scene that he was, I spoke to him in the importance of the relay baton is a metaphor for team. And the relay baton means that you're part of a team. And if we don't all perform, our time is poor.
Right.
So they really are codependent.
Sure.
So I used the codependence of that.
Sure.
And described it and said the relay is like going to war together. And if we don't help each other, we all die.
Right.
So that was how I kind of brought it back together. Team sport, you probably don't need to do it a lot.
Right.
Or it's less common. And I think individual athletes definitely, there's a certain sense of survival and a certain sense of self-preservation.
Right.
So it's self-centeredness is extremely high.
Right.
And it's hard to describe other than when you're in it. You don't see it in team sport. You see guys help each other. I was just at IMG and saw guys training, gridiron guys training as a team. And when they train in the gym, there's music on.
Right.
And they're helping each other.
Yeah.
And they're pumping each other when they're as a PB.
Sure.
I just looked at it and thought, if I could bottle that
yeah.
and bring that into our relay teams, it'd be awesome. Cool. That was a good example of seeing team and why I loved it so much.
Well, I think that's one of the challenges in the U.S. when you work with track and field, it becomes a very challenging, sometimes frustrating situation because it almost acts as nine different teams.
You know,
you got your throwers and you got your distance and you got your sprinters and you got your relays and you got your jumpers.
Right.
You know, and so when you inherit track as a strength coach in the U.S., you know, you're inheriting all these different teams and each coach kind of operates as his own head coach.
Right.
And, you know, they're on their schedule and different things. What's some advice you have for a strength coach in the U.S. that works with, maybe all aspects of track and field, you know, but, you know, it has to work with their coach because you're on both sides. You've been coached and you've been the strength coach. What advice would you give to have that coach? What questions do they need to ask the sport coach to really truly understand it so they can program better for it?
I think the important thing is to bring it back, understand the set plays of the team, and pull in the performance factors that you're improving or working on within the set plays.
Sure.
The better you can do that, the better there's a real congruency between both because it's all about uptake.
Sure.
If coach doesn't uptake it and want to take it on, you're obsolete, you're not really needed. I don't care how much you know or how cool a guy you are. So for me, it's the communication clearly, linking in all of your knowledge and all of your understanding of strength gains and the performance factors you want and linking them to set plays and making sure you don't use jargon.
Yeah.
But you use use a speech which is affable and easy to understand for the coach because all he really wants is what will make his team better.
Right.
So I think, for example, why I love NFL so much is the breaking speed and the change of direction speed. There is no better in the world to me than, I know football and soccer there is as well, but nothing cuts as fast and as sharp and has to avoid such a collision as NFL. So for me, the brutality, the explosiveness, is second to none.
Right.
And in training that, it needs to be related to that movement.
Sure.
So I think if you can use set plays in the game and show the coach and discuss your principles with those, so get some of the game and discuss how you're going to work on it and what player X is, how they've improved in that.
Sure.
I think you'll get better uptake.
Yeah.
And I think that's the easiest way to really take it up. Yeah.
So really to kind of identify the strength qualities that you're most deficient in and develop those strength qualities and really focus in.
It's like reactive strength, for example. Yeah. Reactive strength is a really good one because if you talk about the speed of going from eccentric to concentric contraction, the coach will understand it.
Right.
And if you talk about agility and just discuss the ability of that person to move around the opponent, your background knowledge is working right back to kinesthetic awareness and their balance properties and their reactive strength. So reactive strength is a principle, but linking it in, you'll get much better uptake if you discuss elasticity and explosive plyometric training and reactive strength with the coach in a practical format. I think agility is where it all lies. And I think that's where people talk about straight line speed, but for me, I'm just as interested, if not more, in change of direction.
Yeah, because sure.
For me, that's where the strength coach has a massive role, and it's often undervalued and not understood. Proximal stability in a joint, in a hip joint or a knee joint, is so much more based on the control of that joint, and right. The control of that joint comes from the neurological input,
sure.
Which is strength based. Yeah. Often, so I think that side gets underpinned. And another method I use, which is a little bit more structured for coaches, is I have a principle where I go through. If you ask someone, how do you change someone's movement, or how do you make them stronger, or what have you done to change or alter your training? I think a lot of people don't have a method of how they do it. I use a method that allows me to control or explain what I've done to someone. So there's a problem. The person can't change direction well. I hypothesize the contributing factors. So what is the problem here? I combine my physio knowledge, biomechanics, strength training, and movement analysis and gait re-ed all together to come up with reasons why this might have happened.
Right.
I'll then review them and test them and then come up with the contributing factors and then go back to the coach. So I've got a process
right, sure.
I've used
sure.
to assess the agility component. Right. So for me, that's a system you can use, and think about whether it's a mechanical reason, a coordination reason, a physiological reason. And I think if you're doing that often, you'll structure your program a little better
right.
and more specific to what you want.
You know, when you and up to that point, we're talking strength qualities. You know, when you're dealing with specifically track athletes, a lot of them are coming in with almost a zero training age.
Right.
You know, and so when you design programs for, you know, to kind of go away from hypertrophy, because that may affect
right. sport. 100%.
You work into strength and power, but that strength and power protocols has a hypertrophic effect.
It does.
They're maybe untrained. How do you prevent, as a strength coach, the athletes overdeveloping, because they're going to be successful. They're going to have high testosterone levels. They're going to be, you know, they're going to be very efficient hormonally.
I think if you look at in your planned training program, if you use bumpers periodization program, and you're in the general preparation phase or specific preparation phase of a young athlete, you really work on building structural stability in the joint.
Right.
And if you can do that well and develop that in your program and keep it quite simple and make sure that your exercises aren't too advanced
sure.
neurologically. So closed chain kinetic training is okay to start with. Open chain kinetic is where you want to move. But I think if you stick to general principles and keep them thorough, and you don't have to keep changing, and then move towards complex tasks, there's no doubt that clean squat, deadlift are where you want to aim.
Sure.
And make them all neurologically dependent. So you're specifying them to the movement quality you've got, you want to aim towards. But I think with a young athlete, it's all about thoroughness. And with a young athlete coming through, power to weight is what we want in athletics.
Right.
No matter what the event. But you need to be sure that you're thinking of muscle as a neurological issue as well. It's not just muscle. There's a nerve impulse. So really, training is neurological training, strength right. training.
Sure.
If you think of it like that, you don't need to put weight on a lot. And I think later on, because an athlete who carries too much weight, who sprints, ground contact time is what we're looking at, and flight time, that's right. what we assess a lot, and you're adversely affecting that. So if I see a big guy sprint, I don't see many bodybuilders run faster than 100 meters
right.
For a reason.
Right.
So Darwinism has taught everyone that power to weight's the key. So think of that back into your program, and don't necessarily work too much on thinking just hypertrophy.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I want to switch gears a little bit.
Yeah.
I think what's great about you and just getting to know you even better is, you know, you were a strength coach. That was kind of your background. Then you get into a situation where, you know, maybe you're at odds a little bit with a physio.
Yeah.
So you know what? You can sit there and complain about it,
or
you can do what you did and go out and become a physio.
And
then you go into coaching, sport coaching, and building a business. You have this entrepreneurial mind, but you're constantly sharpening that sword as you've gone. You're opening a new center, the Melbourne Center for Athletic Performance, which is going to be a beautiful facility. It's got the good stuff in for the flooring, right?
All right, yeah.
But the but you're putting this facility together. It's going to be unique in this area. What, you know, what would your advice be to coaches that are in a similar situation where, you know, you have to kind of evolve in this business, or you're going to be pushed out of this business?
I think that what I've learned, you need to have a growth mindset if you really want to stay in it. If you don't want to stay, if you want to sit on your own and be on your own and work at a local gym, that's cool because it's comfortable and you can do that. But if you want to work in sport and then you want to work in elite sport, be prepared to be under stress.
Right.
So the way I think is, if I'm going to be under stress, I'm going to prepare myself most to be under that stress. And how I prepare is, for me, I've worked on both a practical and an academic development in my career. They've kind of paralleled each other. So I don't work one more than the other.
Sure.
But practicality means more in terms of giving me answers faster than academic.
Sure.
So I've learned more practically than I have academically. And I think hence the reason why science really, the practical side precedes the research, and the research is usually based on what has already been achieved.
Great.
And I've done my own master's in biomechanics by research, so that even validated more and more what I thought.
Yeah.
My hypothesis was proved true based on science, but I kind of knew it anyway.
Yeah,
at the end of all this study, I ended up
pretty
thinking,
much what research always is.
Pretty much. At the end of it, I thought, gee, I've done this, but it just answered the question I had at the start. So I guess the hypothesis and the scientific process was great, and I love learning it.
Right.
But I think from my standpoint as a strength coach, I worked at an AFL club as the second conditioning guy down. I would do the jobs, I'd move the cones and all those jobs at the club. I think physiotherapy in Australia is very linked in with medical. They're inextricably linked.
Right.
It's even more so than possibly in the US.
Sure.
And you know, often in physiotherapy, the grades you need to get into it are very similar to med.
Yeah.
They're just under med.
Yeah.
So these guys are frustrated med students. MRI and CT and ultrasound now in Australia, you can refer. So I'm allowed to refer MRI, read reports from MRI and CT, and use that for my athlete I'm working with.
Wow.
So we're not independent of the med, where I can refer myself. So from a strength coach standpoint, initially I got annoyed that I'd be training someone and the physiotherapist would not understand where I was coming from and would try to talk medical jargon and discuss it from an injury standpoint,
right,
particularly related to joints. So not I
from
thought...
From a performance standpoint.
Correct. And I just thought the best way around that was to study it.
Yeah.
So I went and did the degree myself. I now practice as a physio as well in Australia, in Melbourne, and practice weekly. Sure. I make sure every week I've still got my patients at least one night a week because I'm busy. Conditioning takes 80% of my time, but it gave me a real understanding and a real mindset and framework to understand when I was talking to someone that was in a physio field or a medical field, how they only do what they know.
Right.
So when someone says something, it's coming from your perspective.
Sure.
Which is not always right, but they may say it with such vindication that their point comes across.
Agreed.
I've seen a lot of strength coaches and conditioning guys solve problems fast and much faster than medical teams have come up with results.
Mm-hmm.
It happened, it's happened to me in athletics as well. So,
and vice versa.
Correct. Correct. And I think a physical therapist in the US that's really understanding of the sport really understands the strength paradigm and the principles of it properly will not be separated from it, but will embrace.
Sure.
Because embracing them is so fundamental and prevents physical therapists working.
Right.
Because really the best injury preventer is the strength and conditioning coach.
Agreed.
That's from a physio head talking now as well. I know that. So to me, that's a given.
Well, and that's just it. I mean, I think so many times it's strength coaches will get upset because, they're telling them what to do or vice versa. And, and we throw our hands up and complain about, the difference in education or the difference
right.
in the job or whatever. And what I think really what it came down to is that you wanted a better understanding so you can communicate better.
100%.
And so you went to the extreme.
Yeah, I did.
You probably don't need to go that far as a strength coach, but at the same time, having a good understanding and communicating That's a recipe for success.
Correct. Correct. And I think really understanding the principles behind soft tissue prevention, you know, the integrity of tendons, and how training, strength training, really is at the forerunner of developing that.
Right.
So we know now that the latest research in tendon strength is isometric strengthening rather than just eccentric strengthening.
Right.
So your best pain reliever pre-session, if someone has patellar tendinopathy, is to do a wall sit isometrically at 90 degrees.
Right.
That's like the best Panadol or pain relief you can get pre-session.
That's right.
So that's where the strength coach can learn from it and use it practically in a strength session and get away with their strength session rather than stopping because someone said you shouldn't do it, or a physical therapist from their mindset said you shouldn't do it based on this. Right. No, they need to train.
Right.
They
right.
need to do it.
Agreed.
It's not rest is better. We know tendons don't work best or develop better when they're just rested. We know they get worse.
Right.
So that's a little example of how you can combine it.
I agree with you 100%. Well, we got to get back to the conference, but we end the show with some resources. So give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
Be open to change. Yeah. Be open to change and cope with the unexpected and learn to feel comfortable with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, embrace that, right?
Correct.
Because under struggle, just like under load, that's when there's a neuromuscular adaptation. That's when there's if it's your mindset's the only thing that determines whether or not that's a negative adaptation or a positive adaptation.
Correct. If you keep that mindset with your athlete, then you keep that mindset with your colleagues.
Right.
You're an open-ended learner.
Yeah, I agree.
So it's fine, man.
What about a book, app, and website recommendation?
Yeah, I mean, from a book standpoint, I read so widely that for me, Greg, The Essentials of Strength Training, mm-hmm. to me is excellent, and it's updated often.
Sure.
That's what I like best about it.
Yeah.
So from someone learning, I bought the editions ago.
Right.
For me, that's a really good textbook.
Sure.
It's thorough, it's up to date, it's researched really well. I think that's a bit of a Bible, that one.
Yeah, I agree with that.
If you want my honest opinion, I mean, Fleck and Kramer, when it came out years and years ago, I got that, but and learned through that, and then I saw the issues with it.
Right.
Guys like Greg come along and put out his one, and so I think that's the best text. From a researcher point of view, Didier Schmidbleicher would be the one that I'd think. He's an East German background.
Yeah.
If you can Google anything to do with him, he often comes up with a lot of new ideas. Mm. He's an East German background. Works in the German Olympic research development, mainly in throws and jumps.
Yeah.
Mainly in jumps. But he's someone you should really look at learning off.
That's good.
I think he's someone that is super useful. And from an app point of view, I tend not to use a lot. I mean, I learn from a lot, but I'm a big reader.
Yeah.
So I'm someone who I read research and tend to read journal articles a lot, but then also read texts. So for me, from the app standpoint, there's not one I know of a lot.
Sure.
And I use a lot, but I don't. For example, in biomechanics right now, there are a lot of apps coming out. I think one app from a coaching point, there's lots and lots out there. I think if you can get a really good coaching app for reviewing your athletes, filming, and we all know of a lot out there, a lot of ones out there.
Sure.
If you can get one of those that's useful, I think go down that path.
Yeah. Well, guys, you can see why he's one of the best in the country, and appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with everybody. And
no problem.
Just that growth mindset, what you said, I share that. The people that watch this typically share that as well. And I think as long as we all maintain that growth mindset, we'll continue to push this profession in the right direction. So appreciate it, man.
Easy. Thanks, Ron. No worries. See you later.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey, on Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.